I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'll tell you what, I don't know much about hockey, but I don't understand how that Panarin hit was a no-call. And somehow, after Oshie was wobbly getting up after taking that hit, the Rangers ended up on the power play. Someone will need to explain that to me. And maybe that someone is Grant Paulson, who knows hockey as much as anybody does in town. He will be our guest at 11 a.m. Of course, we'll talk NFL draft with Grant as well. Before Grant, Jay Gruden will jump on with us at 10:35. I actually have already recorded an interview with Jay, some of which I'm going to play back in about 30 minutes. Jay's out in Cabo. Taking it easy, playing some golf. He'll join us at 10:35. And our good friend, Scott Jackson, who we haven't heard from in a while. Scott's down in the Tidewater area hosting Sports Talk Radio down there. Scott will jump on with us at 12, and we'll talk to Scott. We'll get to the hockey game in a bit more detail. I wanted to actually read this tweet to open up the show because it made me think about something as a possibility that I'm sure – you know, isn't necessarily reality, but who knows? It comes from Jason. Jason wrote, "Kevin, since they're not trading back and they've made that clear, why don't they just say it's Daniels if it's Daniels? We know that it's Caleb Williams to Chicago. Why not indicate whether it is directly or through really solid sources or through some sort of friend in the media that they're going to take Daniels?" First of all, if they do know it's Jaden Daniels, maybe, just maybe, this is a bit of a reach, but it's a theory. Maybe the league doesn't want them to say that it's Daniels. Maybe the drama of what might happen at number two, the league wants to remain a cliffhanger until Washington's on the clock on Thursday night. You know, there's a massive audience, and everybody knows that the first pick is going to be Caleb Williams. But the big drama of the last few months has been what happens at number two, because that then creates the direction for New England and the Raiders and the Broncos and the Vikings, and there's a lot of drama around this number two pick. So I don't know that that's what's going on. I just thought to myself that it would benefit the telecast on Thursday night on ESPN and on the NFL Network if Washington's pick is unknown, and that there's a lot of drama when Roger Goodell gets handed the card and walks to the stage for number two, because there's not going to be any drama for number one. The drama at number one will be, there's no drama, and we'll actually know pretty quickly, because I don't think Chicago is going to take all of their 15 minutes to wait for one last-ditch offer. They seem settled on Caleb Williams. But Jason, that assumes that they know it's Daniels. I believe that they have Jaden Daniels as their number one quarterback. I think Peters and Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury have had Jaden Daniels as the guy that they wanted to, you know, perhaps draft, you know, after they went through the entire process, maybe for a few months now. But we won't know for sure because they haven't told anybody for sure. You know, there's been some reporting here and there. Peter Schrager seems to think that Washington's locked in on Jaden Daniels. Albert Breer yesterday said that a team in the top 10 told me Monday they'd heard that any of the remaining issues between Washington and Jaden Daniels' camp have been smoothed over. We heard that and read that from Ralph Vacchiano at Fox as well. And Breer said, I'm not finding many people with rival teams that don't think the Heisman winner is DC bound. It certainly is the strong consensus at this point, the overwhelming consensus. We've gotten to that point where it would seem, reading the tea leaves, reading, you know, actual stories from credible reporters and draft evaluators, and not only is Jaden Daniels thought to be the second best quarterback in the draft, that the team with the number two pick will select him. There's been some J.J. McCarthy buzz here a little bit over the last week. But here we are on, by the way, one of two remaining days of discussing our football team without the quarterback that will be in place for a few years minimum. You know, a few years. We hope many, many years, but certainly a few years before things are settled as to whether or not they got it right or got it wrong. Anyway, that's just one idea. The league would certainly benefit from they're going to have a massive audience regardless, right? I mean, if people knew that it was going to go Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels 1-2, it's not like the audience would be that much different, but it might be a little bit different at the jump. I mean, there is going to be real drama when Washington is on the clock Thursday night as of now. And we will have, you know, several minutes, I guess. I don't know. Will they put the card up quickly? Will they sit there if they've already decided they're not going to accept any trades? And that's been the reporting. Of course, they could be lying about that. They could be posturing on that. But if they've got their mind made up and they're not trading back, will the card go up quickly? Right after Chicago's goes up quickly? Or will the league ask that Washington take their time to, you know, build the suspense? Washington may say, no, we want our guy to know he's our guy and that we didn't have to think any longer about it, that we've known all along and there was no chance we were going to sit there and wait for another offer. Personally, I don't know why any team that has a draft choice in any round wouldn't take every available second before turning in the card. I haven't sat in a draft room before, but we've certainly heard how many times you're on the clock and you get a call, and the call is an attractive call with respect to the offer being made. I don't know why you wouldn't sit there and take every available second. And just make sure that somebody isn't out there thinking crazy and getting ready to act crazy. Why not? Can't hurt. There you go. Thank you, Jason, for that. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. I am, as everybody knows at this point, if you listen to this show, I have been pro Jaden Daniels at 2 from the jump. Denton has as well. I think he's much closer to number 1 in this draft than he is to number 3 in this draft. I hope Washington takes him. I hope they come to the same conclusion. But if they don't, I am on board with whatever they do. And that leads me to this from Mark. Man, you are trustworthy. You've gone from the most cynical to the most trusting. Amen. I don't know why he said amen at the end, Mark, but yes, this is the first draft in 24 years, but really more or less 10 to 15 when we've known. You know, we really knew for about 10 years, those final 10 years, maybe the final 15 years of the 24 that Snyder was the owner, that this was nothing more than just an exercise in the suspension of reality, that it didn't matter what they did. They would either get it wrong, or if they got it right, they would screw it up once the player got here. This is a nice feeling. I am with, I think, a lot of you in that it just feels great to have an organization that represents your city, that represents your rooting interest, that is functional, that is more like the other organizations around the league and isn't the black eye of the league, isn't the laughingstock clown show of the league. It's nice to have that in place. You know, the free agency process, the coaching hiring process, the general Adam Peters would have never been here had Dan Snyder been the owner. Dan Quinn would never be here if, I don't think he would be, if Snyder was the owner. It's a totally new day, and that's why during the most horrific season on the field I can remember, 2023, we had already won. It was already a victorious 2023 campaign because we were headed towards this, the first offseason of hopefully many, many more to come, of being at least a normal functioning organization, if not a highly functioning organization. Time will tell on that. But I'm excited about what they do. And as I've mentioned before, it's the perfect storm that you end up getting rid of, the stench of Snyder, and the new regime gets a clean slate that includes the most salary cap space in the league and the most picks in the top 100 in the league and the most that the organization's ever had. It is this blank canvas that Adam Peters and Lance Newmark and Dan Quinn and Martin Mayhew and Doug Williams. I read, by the way, several of you tweeted me that story, and I forget who wrote it. Somebody mentioned, or maybe it was Adam Peters himself that mentioned that Doug Williams had been very valuable in the process. We love to hear that Doug is involved in the process and Doug is contributing. Doug's been around a bit. On the quarterback front, I bet you Doug could give them a lot of advice. I think Doug gave some advice on various quarterbacks that ultimately were drafted by this team. It just wasn't paid attention to. This is going to be fun. Free agency's been crazy in the volume of players, but not really that nuts in terms of the money spent or the actual players added. But man, come Thursday night and Friday night and Saturday, this is the biggest opportunity this organization has had in a long time when it comes to the draft. And thank God it's not the old regime managing it. I think Jaden Daniels is going to be the pick. I feel strongly about that right now. I know that there's been buzz about J.J. McCarthy. I think ultimately Adam Peters and this group are going to settle on Jaden Daniels. Now, Diana Russini tweeted something out this morning. She tweeted out, Jaden Daniels was given a high grade by many teams. While the quarterback is cool with Washington, I'm told in his, quote, dream world, closed quote, he would reunite with Raiders coach Antonio Pierce, who was an assistant coach at Arizona State when he was a Sun Devil, or play under Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota. That was what Diana tweeted out this morning. Look, I'm just going to tell you, I don't think anybody in an NFL front office is going to care about what the player's preference is. Look, we played back the interview yesterday with Greg Holcomb, who is a lifelong family friend and a lifelong quarterback coach of J.J. McCarthy. And he specifically said that J.J. and his family have places they want to go to and places, quite frankly, they don't want to go to. Of course. It's only natural. They have places they'd love to play, you know, in maybe cities or teams or in the case of the Raiders with Jaden Daniels, a guy that he has great, you know, memories of, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. The idea that he has other teams that he prefers doesn't matter. It's not the way the NFL works. And from his standpoint, more likely than not, at 23 years old, going on 24, if it is a good place for him here in Washington, coaching staff, locker room, we know it's a great place to live. You know, a lot of people don't know that until they come here. You know, one of the interesting things about our city is that players that end up playing here that aren't from here end up loving it here more often than not, and sometimes more often than not staying here and raising a family here. We know what a great city and surrounding area the DMV is. But for him, it'll be about Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn and his teammates. And, you know, that's going to be a big part of him acclimating to a place that's brand new for a kid who's never been on the East Coast, never spent time on the East Coast, and will change his mind with respect to where he wants to be. Looking forward to finally getting to tomorrow. We will take some calls, more calls than we've taken. That is the plan. To get everybody in and on the record. We're going to make sure that some of our longtime callers are on the record with who they like. This is the conversation, quarterback, that we always remember. It's not going to be hard to remember my position. Jaden Daniels is my number one at number two. And it's not even close for me. But I'd be okay. I would. With Penix Jr. or Drake May. Maybe a little bit less so with J.J. McCarthy. Anyway. All right, when we come back, we will get to the Caps game last night. We'll get to some of the other things that happened in sports last night. Jay Gruden after that. Kevin Sciancho, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I thought the first two games looks a little bit off. He's struggling. I mean, that's... It's hard. Like, it's the playoffs, on the road. He's getting a tough matchup. So he's, but I mean, it's two games, right? We're going back home now. We'll get an opportunity at to be able to control the matchup for him, and he can flip it. Like, that's one thing about O. He can flip it in one game, and now he can all of a sudden be a difference maker and help us win a game or be a driver in winning us a game on home ice.
That was Spencer Carberry talking about Alex Ovechkin's performance here in the first two games, which has been pretty much non-existent. One shot on goal in two games. It's been a tough matchup for him, certainly at the Garden with the Rangers. And then Keandre Miller's shorthanded goal that gave the Rangers a 4-2 lead late second period. Ovechkin kind of lost the puck, turned it over, and that led to what was really a beautiful goal with the pass back to Miller on the shorthanded goal. So Ovechkin struggling for sure, and that's a part of why the Capitals are down 2-0. But overall, last night was about special teams. It was about the Rangers, you know, scoring not only a shorthanded goal last night, but also two power play goals. The Caps also had two power play goals. Dylan Strome and Tom Wilson both scored on power plays. The Caps got off to the start that they wanted. Connor McMichael scoring unassisted, you know, 5.5 minutes into the game last night to take a 1-0 lead. But they just could not stay out of the penalty box. And that led to all of these opportunities. But man, you got to wonder what they were looking at on replay on the Panarin hit on TJ Oshie. I don't know much about this stuff. I readily admit that it's not the sport in which I have, you know, any level of even fan expertise, but that looked like it was high. It looked like it was towards the neck and head area. Oshie clearly was wobbled a bit. They went to TV break as they went to look at it on replay. I was expecting to come back and Washington was going to have, you know, a significant major penalty and a lot of time to generate some offense in a one-man advantage. And no, amazingly, the Rangers were on the power play. It was a better effort overall last night. I was reading various numbers, especially from the site that I think does a great job of breaking these games down, Russian Machine Never Breaks. But in talking about sort of the 5-on-5, you know, the Caps did very well. You know, 5-on-5, they were up 8 on shot attempts at the end of the game, 10 in scoring chances, 3 up 3 against the Rangers in high danger chances. But the referees have made this not a 5-on-5 series so far, with all of the penalties being taken. And again, the Panarin head shot to TJ Oshie made little sense to me. The backbreaker was the shorthanded goal from Keandre Miller. And it was, you know, as Ovechkin said, he said it was a bad bounce, an unlucky bounce. He was not able to snag that and keep it away from the opportunity that was created by the loss of the puck. Overall, Charlie Lindgren, okay, 23 stops, 27 shot attempts, 4 goals. But again, 2 of them were on the power play. So the Caps will head back to D.C. For Game 3 on Friday night. So there's a rest here for them heading back. And they have been more effective against the Rangers at home. They are 2-0 against the Rangers at home this year. So we'll see if they can get back into the series with a win in Game 3, which is pretty crucial. Down 3-0 doesn't happen at all in basketball. I think it's only happened once or twice in the history of the NHL playoffs. But certainly a spirited effort overall. I enjoyed the game. I thought the intensity of the game was there. I was actually, Denton, flipping back and forth between the Monumental broadcast. I prefer Joe B. and Locker. But I got to tell you, man, the ESPN, I guess, camera angle, the clarity of the picture, the natural sound, I don't know, it was completely different. I was flipping back and forth between the ESPN and the Monumental broadcast, and it was like two different games from the sound alone. I don't know if anybody else picked up on that, but it seemed much more muted in terms of the natural sound of the arena versus the ESPN broadcast. Sean McDonough, by the way, is also so good. He is excellent at everything. Sean McDonough is the number one, you know, ABC ESPN hockey analyst. And I don't know, I've been the biggest Sean McDonough fan for years. I think he's one of the best. And one of my favorite things about Sean McDonough is Sean McDonough is one of those play-by-play guys that definitely injects opinion and emotion into the broadcast that it is a, that is opinion driven. He'll rip somebody. He'll rip the referees. Usually that's left for the analyst to handle, but Sean McDonough sometimes leads the charge on that. So we'll see. Caps Friday night. We will have all of the draft coverage, as we've mentioned, all week long here on the Team 980. Every pick you'll hear right here on the Team 980, Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday. Denton and I will be on the coverage Friday night starting at 7 o'clock. And as of now, they've got five picks that night. But we'll keep you posted on the Caps Rangers, because we will have that on as we are doing, as we're doing the show, to keep you posted on whether or not they can get back into this series with a win. That's a 7 o'clock puck drop at Capital One Arena on Friday night. The Nats lost to the Dodgers last night. Otani, my God, he hit a bomb at Nats Park, 450 feet. They lost 4-1 in that game. And I watched the late night NBA. I watched the Caps primarily and passed on much of the Timberwolves Suns game. Man, the Suns, Denton, I mean, Durant was 6 of 15. 18 points. Booker was 1-for-6 from behind the arc, ended up with 20. Beal, you know, actually played okay. He had 14.6 assists, but they got beat by Rudy Gobert and his 9 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Anthony Edwards didn't have the night he had the other night, didn't shoot it well, but God, can he defend? And the Timberwolves, who I was listening to a few people think that the Timberwolves are actually a legitimate threat to go to the NBA Finals out of the West. Makes the West so interesting. But look, in the NBA, a series does not start until the home team loses a game. And Phoenix goes back home. But, man, they have been non-competitive in the first two games of this series, going down 2-0. And I think this will be a big... this will add fodder to those that think that Kevin Durant kind of parachuted in on the Golden State Championships, even though that is not true. He was the best player on those two teams that won it. The Pacers became the first road team to win a playoff game last night, beating the Bucks 125-108. By the way, Lillard again on fire in the first half, had 26 in the first half. And then I watched start to finish last night, and it was over late. But I watched Mavs Clippers. Kawhi Leonard was back in the lineup after almost a month of being on the sideline, and he was slow to start. He was off a bit, but Dallas, this was a defensive struggle, both sides. Luka hit a bunch of big shots. Kyrie hit a couple of big shots. Nobody shot it great, but the Mavericks became the second team to win a road game, winning 96-93 in L.A. That series is deadlocked at a game apiece. I'll tell you what, man. I know that people say that Ty Lue is a great NBA coach and a great NBA strategist, especially they'll say in-game or before an opponent, but there is just way too much ISO ball for me in the Clippers offense, Denton. I mean, there are possessions where Harden is the only one. It's just the same thing we've seen from Harden. You know, Houston, Philly doesn't matter. You know, where he's the only one to touch the basketball, and it's between his legs 35 times from 28 feet out, and he creates a little bit of separation and fires a three. And he was 2-for-10 last night from behind the arc. When you don't make a team move defensively, it is harder for you on the other end because you're facing a fresh team on the offensive side of the ball, and they just don't move the ball well enough at all for my liking. The guy that is the, you know, instant energy for the Clippers is Westbrook. He actually played well last night, but God, he can't shoot. He just cannot shoot. He actually made a big three late, but other than that, we get tonight in the NBA playoffs, we get just a doubleheader, and we'll get to see for the first time, because I didn't watch a lot of game one, get to see what Oklahoma City looks like up 1-0 against New Orleans. I'll watch that. The Celtics should sweep the Heat without Jimmy Butler playing. I can't imagine as tough and as competitive as the Heat are. I can't imagine that they can beat the Celtics. All right, Jay Gruden next, right after these words from a few of our sponsors. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980.
Big news out of college football today. The Heisman Trophy is reinstating Reggie Bush's 2005 Heisman Trophy, which means Reggie Bush is now back to officially being a Heisman Trophy winner. It was stripped from him years ago due to receiving financial benefits from USC, something that is now legal with name, image, and likeness. NHL last night, Caps fall 0-2 to the Rangers following a 4-3 loss in Game 2. Following the game, head coach Spencer Carberry acknowledging that Alex Ovechkin is struggling, saying, quote, "He looks a bit off. He is struggling," end quote. Couple days rest. Game 3 will be in D.C. on Friday at 7. Nats lose to the Dodgers last night 4-1. Otani hit a 450-foot bomb for the Dodgers. They'll play again today at Nats Park at 6:45. It was announced earlier today the Steelers not planning on picking up Justin Fields' fifth-year option at quarterback. And that's what's trending.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
So Jay Gruden is on vacation. He's out in Cabo playing some golf. Not feeling 100%, but he got up early this morning with me, very early this morning, and recorded a lengthy interview, which you'll hear the whole thing on my podcast later today. But I carved out 17 minutes of a conversation with Jay, which wasn't just about the quarterbacks or this draft. It was about some of the experiences he had evaluating players, the process, the top 30 visits, the significance of them. I can tell you right now, he thinks Jaden Daniels should be the pick at number two, but he's very close with Daniels and May and McCarthy. But it started off with me kind of asking him, because Jay's doing a lot of media work. Has it gotten to the point where he is just ready for this thing? It's probably gotten to the point where it's exhausting, and here's what he said.
Yeah, I think you are too in the building about now. This is where I think it's time that everybody's just taking a step back to probably come in early this morning, just talk about their later round picks, rank the board one more time, and then go home and then be ready to come back Thursday night after a nice dinner before the draft. But this is a grind on a lot of people, you know, the scouts, obviously the GMs, the coaches, the assistant coaches, everybody involved put a lot of time and work in it, as they should anyway, because this is a very critical time of the year.
So this is actually, you're wrapped up at this point, the day before the draft.
You should be. I think there might be some guys, like I can remember with Scott McLuhan and some other guys, we try to fiddle with the board a little bit up mid to later round picks. Like I try to get, they might have had them in the sixth or seventh round. I try to get them boosted up to the fifth or fourth round. Just little things of that nature. A couple last-minute arguments. But it was fun. It's fun because, you know, everybody has their own input. And you got the scouts who did the area. You got the GM. You got, you know, the coaches and the position coaches. And, you know, you just, you're not going to see eye-to-eye with everybody, but you got to just make sure that you try to get them in the right spot where they're going to be taken. So if they're available and you like them, you get them.
You wanted Matt Ioannidis where you guys ended up taking him, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted Matt. We had him as a priority free agent. And I said, oh, this guy is, you know, he's team captain at Temple. He plays his ass off. He can stop the run. He's an adequate pass rusher. He's not like, you know, Warren Sapp or Aaron Donald, for God's sakes. But he's a good role player. He's a rotational defensive lineman to get in the fifth round. Big bodies like that are hard to find. And and he played pretty good for us. And he went and got a free agent contract to Carolina. I don't know if he's still playing or not, but you know, those are guys that you got to have in your fifth and sixth round. It's very hard. If you look around the draft, just go back to last year's draft. Look at every team's fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders. Not many of them are producing. You know, the ones that hit on those, it makes a big difference in your roster and your football team. So you got to take your time on those guys and don't just throw a dart at the dartboard and try to guess. Make sure you do your due diligence and have a reason for why you want a guy.
But when you said when Scott McLuhan was here, you guys were still fiddling with the board, you know, a day out, was Matt Ioannidis the example you were thinking of?
Yeah, Ioannidis. And then when Scott left, we had a couple other guys. We moved up the board. That happens all the time. And some guys want to move guys off the board. Like I've had some players or quarterbacks or players that I thought couldn't play. And I'm like, why are we having them in the third round? We got to get this guy back to the sixth. So, you're not right all the time, but you got to have those conversations because it's important.
You know, people have said this about you, that as far as coaches go, you are an excellent talent evaluator. You know, we've talked about this before. You've told me that you loved doing that part of the job in addition to coaching. What made you good at it?
I think being around different leagues helped me out a lot. You know, I could see a guy, I could say, this guy couldn't play for me in the Arena League. You know what I mean? Why we had him in the third round? So I think playing in different leagues at different levels, you know, playing football with guys and coaching with my brother and then coaching the Arena League, coaching in the UFL with guys that aren't quite good enough to make it, really helped me out a lot. And obviously, just watching. I have a thing for watching every position very closely and take a lot of time doing it. And it was the most fun part from the work standpoint of the job was the draft, in my opinion, because you get to watch the Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine Games, you get to see all the practices. And you find a diamond in the rough every now and then, and it's a grind, but it's a fun part. It's very important, obviously. I mentioned before the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders. You know, if you can hit on a couple of those, it makes a difference.
What was your best personnel call? Where, you know, whether it was Bruce or McLuhan or Kyle Smith, took your advice and it worked out.
Oh shoot, I don't know. You know, the obvious ones were, I think we're all pretty much in agreement on, you know, obviously, Daron Payne. Vita Vea was right there. If he would have not been drafted, would have taken Vita Vea. I wanted Daron Payne, but we got Daron Payne. Obviously, Jonathan was easy. I actually was wrong on that one. I wanted Reuben Foster. I thought Daron Payne would be gone. And Jonathan Allen would be gone.
Right.
But he fell right to us, so. We had Jonathan rated ahead of Reuben, so that was an easy pick for us. We took Jonathan, thank goodness. Reuben had some injuries and didn't work out. But, I don't know. I mean, the linebacker from North Carolina, who I liked, I moved up to
Cole Holcomb.
Cole Holcomb. That's probably one of my better ones because we had him as just a free agent grade, and I moved him all the way up to the fifth. You know, linebackers that can run 4.45 and have 100 tackles 3 years in a row, I think are worthy of being moved up to the fifth round because worst case scenario, he's going to be really good on special teams and he's going to be a good role player backup. He could play nickel diamond and cover. So probably that one. But there are other arguments within that, like, you know, you have and you're like, this guy's way better than a sixth rounder and it's area scouts are saying they're arguing and then he gets, and I used to bet some of them that he'd get drafted in the third or fourth round and sure enough, he'd get picked in the third round. And, yeah, that's the fun stuff about it. You just never know. You know, you never know what other teams think about other guys. You just got to do your work and communicate with the scouts that did them and communicate, understand where he came from and what type of guy he is, what kind of work ethic. You got to know about from the strength coaches. Does he like the weight room? Nowadays, it's even more difficult because these guys are getting paid and, they're prima donnas. And if they don't like what they see at their college, they just jump in the portal and transfer. So it's a major concern with new players coming out, I believe. It's a whole different breed of character. It's going to be very difficult in the evaluation process moving forward. I mean, some guys play on three different teams already, and it's going to be hard to evaluate. You're going to have three different coaches to talk to. Two coaches will say he's lazy, he's a quitter. No, one coach will say he's great. So it's going to be a tough process moving forward for all these evaluators to evaluate.
Yeah, that's a good point. The number of people that you have to talk to now that these players have played at so many more schools because of Portal and NIL.
Yeah, it used to be one school.
Yeah.
You talk to the strength coach, you talk to the offensive coordinator, you talk to the head coach, and you're done. Now it's three different schools. That'll be tough.
The strength coach, by the way, you're not the first person that's sort of emphasized that. I've heard many times that the strength coach is the one that will really know more than any other about a player's work ethic, his work habits. Is that true?
Yes, it's very important because once you get them in the building here, you got to make sure their body continues to develop. Some of them might be a little undersized from a, you know, upper body, and they can get bigger, and a lower body, they can get stronger and faster. But they got to work at it. If they don't work at it, they're not going to get bigger and stronger. So you take them off the board. You know what I mean? If you're not going to work at it in college when you're a young man developing, you're not going to work at it in the NFL when you get paid. So work ethic is very critical in the weight room, and we try to talk to as many strength coaches as possible. And most of the time, you can tell. You know, at the combine, they take their shirt off. That's why they take their shirt off at the combine, standing in their underwear. They're trying to show their physique and what kind of work they put in. They have a little pot belly and skinny barrel chest, and you're probably going to say, this guy. You know, so,
yeah.
But strength coach is important because they'll talk like me.
Yeah, like me. You had mentioned, by the way, previously when you mentioned, when you talked about Reuben Foster, you said Reuben Foster's tape was one of the best defensive player tapes you had ever looked at.
Yeah, I said linebacker-wise, I said Jalen Smith was number one out of Notre Dame, and he snapped his knee in half in the bowl game. And right. Then Reuben was right there after it. Sideline to sideline, making plays, physicality, just energy. You know, talking to Coach Saban and the type of leader he was, the alpha dog that you want on your show. We never really had that alpha dog on defense, which I was just dying to get.
Right.
You know what I mean? And linebacker position is so critical. We just had so many different moving parts of linebacker. Mason Foster, we tried to get into the Band-Aid, and we started Perry Riley and a bunch of other guys. We never got it right at linebacker. Will Compton did some good things for us, but I never had that alpha dog at linebacker. And Reuben was that type of guy. And he's like the Pied Piper, I thought. I was hoping anyway. And ended up not getting him, but it worked out because we got Johnson. And Johnson's been a good leader for him, a good player for him, obviously.
Right. Well, you did get him eventually, and you said, you know, and I think it was the first day of OTAs or first day of minicamp or whatever it was. By the way, I think he's playing.
Yeah, I was excited for that one.
I think he's in the UFL playing really well.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I still talk to him every now and then. He's in the UFL. The first play of OTAs, he ran through the B-gap on a naked bootleg and stepped on Tyler Catalina's foot. I heard a scream, and he never wanted anybody to get hurt, but I was like, oh, no, I can tell that's Reuben, and sure enough.
Yeah. Of McLuhan, Bruce, Kyle, who took your advice the most? Who leaned on you the most?
I think Kyle, probably. And McLuhan did, too. McLuhan, you know, Scott was a good evaluator. He worked at it. He was set in his ways. He came from a different, place in San Francisco and Seattle and all that. So he really had his network talking to those people out there. I kind of beat to my own drum. I didn't really call other teams and say, hey, do you like this guy or not? You know, I just base it on my own opinion and what the scouts told me about him and the character and all that stuff. But Kyle worked extremely well with me. You know, I love Kyle because he was very adamant of guys he liked and didn't like. And he had a reason for it. As long as you have a reason for why you like a guy or don't like a guy, I'm good with it. And sometimes you can sway me. I'll listen to what you say. And but me and Kyle had the best relationship, I think. Scott was fine. You know, Bruce is Bruce. Bruce is a computer. He's an internet evaluator. So he'll get all his evaluations off the internet somehow. I don't know what the hell how he does that, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. So
the internet evaluators will get you killed.
Yeah, right. Basically reading other people's evaluations of the player or looking
exactly
at highlight
right.
tapes.
Yep.
What did you make of the top 30 visit, you know, at Top Golf? You know, noise last week, the way Washington handled it?
That was a little unique. I think this is a very important pick, obviously. I mean, you can't put the emphasis of the importance of this pick, this number two pick. And they have a couple different options. And I don't know the kids at all. And maybe it's just another way. They've done all their evaluations on them. Maybe they feel like they have their rankings already set. Caleb being one, had 2, 3, and 4. And now they just want to put them out there in a social setting and just see how they communicate and work together with other people, which isn't a bad thing. If it's close between two players and one guy is just a great leader out there and taking charge of the thing and the other guy is just in the corner on a cell phone with his agent, you know, I mean, that could tip the tides. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a pretty good idea, really, but hopefully they got him in the office and did some football, too, before they went to Topgolf.
Right. I was going to ask you, how important are those top 30 visits? How were they handled when you were in Washington?
Oh, I loved them. Yeah, I loved them. It was important for those guys to get with your trainer, number one. That's why you bring them in there, because there might have been a recheck on a knee or an ankle or a past shoulder injury or whatever it might be. So that's the first reason you bring them in there. Then you want to get them with the position coach for a little while, just talk some ball and see how they hit it off. And then I get them, offensive coordinator gets them, I get them, or defensive coordinator, and then I get them for a while. You know, you watch some tapes together. We might, quarterbacks, we might have sent them a playbook, like about a 45-play playbook, and let them study it and then come here and grill them on the questions and have them get on the board and just see how he, you know, can talk football with us and does he understand concepts and what is he trying to do. Some guys are a lot further along than other guys when it comes to, you know, football-wise, plays, concepts, protections, and all that stuff. And you just got to understand that. It's not their fault. It's the way they've been coached. So you just got to try to get a feel for them as people and communicators and what they're like to be around and what kind of football knowledge they have and what kind of football passion they have.
Is there an example of a player that was in for a top 30 visit that you remember that really changed the opinion on him one way or the other?
I wouldn't say. I mean, yeah, there was, but, you know, obviously, yeah.
What?
You know, we had a couple guys that changed in a positive way. Like, I can remember Jared Stidham came in here. He was off the charts as far as drawing up plays and communicating. He's now the starting quarterback for the Broncos, maybe.
Right.
They'll try to get somebody else to replace him. But you know, he went from like a fifth rounder to a second or third rounder, in my book, in that meeting, just talking to him, and it was ability to communicate and understand football and protections and all that stuff. He was good. But, you know, it's just, you just go back in time. And, you know, A.J. Brown was an interesting guy. I mean, we had him in here. He came in to recheck for his injuries, and he's a lot smarter. He's a smart son of a gun. And some of these guys, you just don't know on tape how smart they are when it comes to football and until you get them in the building. So you hear things about them. Maybe they're lackadaisical. Maybe they don't know football that well. They line up on one side because he can't learn the other side. That's because they're in no huddle. That's what they're taught. It's not because they can't learn it. So you get them in there and you realize that this guy is a very intelligent person and football player. So you got it. That's why you have the meetings.
You focused on those that, you know, changed your mind for the positive. I guess you don't want to mention those that changed your mind for the negative.
Yeah, no, I mean, and some of them, even though they might change your mind to the negative, they just might not be a good in social settings like that. You know, they might not just be comfortable.
Right.
You know, the pressure of those things, and they might be a little bit intimidated. But once they get the ball in their hand on the field and they start tackling and running and playing football, they turn into different people. And you got to understand that as well. Does the tape match his personality? I mean, maybe, you know, because, you know, I was kind of a shy guy when I, you know, came up, and I probably wouldn't have fared too well in these meetings and combine interviews, you know, but I get out on the practice field and different people react differently in live situations when it comes to football than in social situations.
Yeah. That's so true.
Talking about the quarterback position and maybe a receiver that has to move around. You got to know a linebacker that has to call the defense, a safety that has to, you know, communicate rotations and motions and all that stuff. I think you got to at least display some kind of football intelligence, and that's where it comes in play. If it's a three technique or a five technique or a seven technique defensive end, you know, that's probably on the back burner. Let's see if he can rush a passer.
2019, you just mentioned A.J. Brown and how much he impressed you in his top 30 visit. That's the draft. Obviously, you guys took Dwayne. We've gone through that ad nauseum over the years. Montez traded back into the first round to take him, but it was Terry in the third round. If you had kept your second round pick, was A.J. Brown a possibility?
Oh, A.J. Brown was top of our – yeah. A.J. Brown was our top receiver in that draft for sure. But we love Terry. Terry was great. Terry at the Senior Bowl, I think, outplayed everybody. The way he worked, you know, another work guy. You know, when you talk to the coaches at Ohio State, you talk to, I mean, this guy is off the charts. He's a team captain for 2 years. So you knew coming in the building, you got yourself a war daddy when it comes to preparation and work ethic. So that was an easy pick in the third. I mean, I wouldn't have been upset if we took him in the second, if we had a second round pick.
That was part of my conversation with Jay Gruden. How about him referring to Bruce Allen as an internet evaluator? Internet evaluating will get you killed. Yeah, there was a lot of that going on, certainly in the last regime. Not much internet evaluating going on, we don't think, with the new group. All right, up next, Grant Paulson will jump on with us. Grant and Danny will be hosting on both stations, 106.7 The Fan and right here on the Team 980, first night coverage, tomorrow night's coverage of the NFL draft. We'll talk some hockey with Grant, but we'll talk a lot of NFL draft. That's next. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.